This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
An Epstein bombshell, a shadowy figure dressed as an inmate, is spotted climbing the stairs to Epstein's cell. What? And we're just getting 11 new hours of video? Where's that video been all this time? I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us.
They've admitted there's thousands and thousands of pages.
Who came to his place? Who flew on his plane? Who went on the Lolita Express? Who went to his private island where girls were molested? Something stinks. I want justice. It's been described as a mystery orange blob, but that is not entirely true. Let's take a look at a clip we got from the video that has just been released. You have to look in the original copy. It's a lot easier to see, but it is an elongated orange figure. It's not, as they're trying to tell us, somebody carrying laundry. That's much better. These are steps going up to Epstein's tier. Okay? We've been told the guards were asleep and one was shopping online when he was killed. We've been told the two doors we've seen over and over and over are the only way to get onto his cell tier. That is a lie. See those two doors? Total BS. Those are not the only two ways to get in and out of that tier. Now, we also were told that there's a problem with the CCTV, that you can't see Epstein's cell. Well, okay, everything we're being fed is poison. Take a listen to this.
The public was already skeptical of the DOJ's claims. The footage from the shoe where Jeffrey Epstein was housed clearly shows Epstein is the only person who entered his cell block the night of his death. A mysterious orange blob climbing the steps to L block has eviscerated all trust in their review. The inspector general says the movement on the staircase around 10:40 p.m. is CO Tova Noel carrying inmate linens up to the L block. But video analysis experts say it's more likely the figure was wearing orange, not carrying orange material.
Joining us, an all-star panel to make sense of what we are learning tonight. But I can tell you this, having been in innumerable CIs, correctional institutes, jails, halfway houses, juvie jails, you name it, I've been in it. Max, hardcore, death row, been there. Nobody walks the halls in a CI with their hands full of laundry. That doesn't happen. Your hands have to be free. If someone were transporting laundry, it would have been in a roller bin. As a matter of fact, we're going to show you in a moment a worker coming out with a roller bin. But see down there, hands free. Everybody, hands free. And first of all, before I go to our investigative report, I want to go to Dr. Dwayne Hendricks, former associate warden at MDC in Brooklyn, former senior warden, USDOJ Department of Justice with the Federal Bureau of Prisons. It goes on and on. Founder, president, New Daylight Foundation, and author of See the Wheelie? That's what I'm talking about. She has her hands free, and everything she wants to carry, she's got it on a workman's apron around her waist. That's SOP. Author of Who Are You? See It, Say It, Seize It. Dr. Hendricks, isn't it true that in a CI, especially one that houses dangerous inmates like this one, nobody is walking around with an armload of laundry? That does. Here's another guy. See? Hands free. What about it, Hendricks?
Yes, that is true. All laundry is carried on a cart. And if they're inmate workers, or there's normally an orderly on each unit, even if it's special housing. Typically, it's an inmate who isn't violent or doesn't have any serious history going on. So typically, they will have laundry on the cart. The staff will open the slots, and the inmate will take whatever laundry from the inmate, and then they exchange. It has to be exchanged for dirty linen to clean linen. And that's standard operating procedure. Typically, laundry exchanges normally happen during business hours. Sometimes they may happen during the evening, but after the 9 o'clock count, inmates are locked down and there's really no reason for them to be out of their cell after that 9 o'clock stand-up count.
Well, you're going to flip when I tell you this, Dr. Hendricks. According to the wardens on the floor, of course, one went to sleep, one was online shopping or some BS like that. They allowed Epstein to go into the bathroom showers to make a private phone call. And I guarantee you there ain't a payphone in the showers. Totally, totally violating the rules of the CI. Letting an inmate go unsupervised into the bathrooms to make a phone call? No.
First of all, he should have had a restroom toilet and a sink in his cell.
He did.
So typically when inmates make phone calls, they'll wheel a phone with a long cord to the cell. They'll open the slot and the inmate will make the phone call at the cell. So unless they took him actually to someone's office to make an unmonitored call, I don't see why that phone call would have happened. Because typically inmates of special housing, other than their attorneys, you only get one call every 30 days.
Joining us, an all-star panel, and we've got a lot to get through tonight. Number one, his hench person, who is a convicted child molester. She just didn't arrange Epstein to get his mitts on these 12, 13-year-old little girls. She took part in the molestation. She's a monster. Ghislaine Maxwell. She just got moved to a cushy, basically, camp. A camp. There are no perimeters. They have yoga. They walk freely. It's the cushiest Club Fed. This is what you look up Club Fed in the dictionary. It's this place. She's been moved there. Why is she getting special treatment? What's happening with her? I don't like it. That's one thing. But right now, I'm more concerned about who is the perp walking up and down the cell steps to Epstein's tier the night he was killed. It was at, I said earlier, almost 11. It was 10:39 p.m. And you're so right, Hendricks. That is not the time that laundry is exchanged or taken to the prison laundry. Okay, what do we know? Straight out to Tisa Tells joining us, investigative reporter. She's at Tisa Tells on YouTube. Tisa, hit me.
The fact that we are looking on a highly edited tape, they released 11 hours. They said there was a minute that skipped. We now know that there's about 8 minutes missing from that tape. There's not even the full, it's 10 hours, 52 minutes. We clearly see a shadowy orange figure. And they want us in a post-Diddy trial world to believe that it's some Tom and Jerry stack of orange jumpsuits up to the ceiling that they're carrying through the correctional facility. And they want us to believe that that's not a human. The fact that the administration, listen, who knows why they are telling us not to believe our lying eyes, but we see it for what it is. That is a human being walking into a cell.
Let's see it again. She's right. Tisa, my words exactly. Should I believe you or my lying eyes? I see what I see. Okay, joining us is Epstein's brother, who also agrees this is not anybody carrying laundry. But I want to go back to what we know about Epstein's death. What do we know? Joining me, Joseph Scott Morgan, professor of forensics, Jacksonville State University, author, Blood Beneath My Feet, star of a hit podcast, Body Bags with Joseph Scott Morgan. Joe Scott has attended over 1,000 death scenes of all varieties, be it accidental, natural causes, or homicide. Joe Scott, does it never end? Okay, I see what I'm seeing. I'm running it right here in front of me. The person clad in orange, is it an inmate in orange? Why isn't he already in his cell? Why is he walking free? Was he sent to this tier? If so, by whom? Why is he wandering around from tier to tier? In other words, floor to floor. Okay, or is it someone wearing inmates' clothes, which is even more disturbing? But I do know it is a human. I believe it is a male because they're tall and they're wearing the prison orange jumpsuit. And they're going to Jeffrey Epstein's tier the night he's murdered. Why are you, like me, so convinced Epstein was murdered? And what does this mystery orange clad person have to do? How does it factor into your thesis?
Well, you know, first off, I think it would be an outlier relative to the injuries related to his death. They're trying to call this a suicide. And the problem is that what has been left behind, which has been well documented by Dr. Bodden, is the fact that you've got this indwelling fractured cartilage in his neck, and it's on both sides, Nancy, right here to the left and the right of the Adam's apple. And then on top of that, you've got this fractured hyoid, which everybody has gone on and on about. Problem is that they are saying that he was hung. And one more thing we have to keep in mind, the ME in this case has stated that this is what's referred to as a soft hanging, which means he kind of settled down into this thing. There was not a lot of force with it. That's what she's opining, and that the hyoid snapped. Now, she explains this by saying that because of his age, the hyoid was ossified to the point where it snapped. Well, maybe that's the case, but you still cannot account for these cartilaginous fractures he has inferior or below that region. That's why so many of us are drawing this, you know, this blank stare you get from us relative to you're trying to sell us this. This is more consistent with a manual strangulation or with a ligature where direct pressure is being applied.
Yeah, I was just about to disagree with you because this is clearly ligature. I mean, when you look at the pictures, this is not manual, Joe Scott. Now, I see in the back what you're talking about. I see in the back, it looks like it could be maybe a thumbprint digging in. No, I think that's the ligature from behind. But the front shot, that is not by hand.
Right. Can you keep this up here for just a quick second,
yes,
Nancy? So you see this furrow. It's very, very, very deep. Do you see how dark it almost looks like? It looks like I think people would say, gee, that looks like a scab. Well, that is actually a furrow abrasion. That's what it's referred to. And it's very, very deep. This does not marry up with all of that dirty cloth that they've got laying around in the on the floor inside of his cell, that squalid area where he was living. And also, if you could please go back to the other image of his throat, you will see a mark that is slightly above that furrow. And just to the left side, there's kind of that abraded area. It looks kind of linear right there. It's superior to the furrow. That's what would be termed as like a readjustment mark, where this thing is being manipulated in some way. So do we have a couple of things going on here? Is it plausible that you could not only have a ligature at work here, but then you have somebody applying direct manual pressure with their hand in adjacent to this or as a part of this to bring about his death? I think that that's very interesting. I'll shut up after this.
Okay, that was a lot of words. And the only reason I'm interrupting, which drives everybody crazy, is driving me crazy, is because that was so much of a download. I'm not saying any of it's wrong. I do say this was not a manual. I mean, I'm not a death investigator like you, but I can look at that and tell you that was a ligature strangulation. I don't need to be an expert to know that was not manual. Right. But everything else, I completely agree. But you have to, you know, when you feed a baby that's not a death investigator, you give it one spoon at a time. That's not what you just did. Just give me your most salient and important point, and maybe I can digest that. Hit me.
Yeah, well, you've got multiple things going on here, Nancy, and we still have to be able to explain the fractured hyoid that is actually above or superior to that furrow. Okay, that's why I'm saying that there could be a couple of things going on here to kind of finish someone off. That's what, you know, kind of runs through your mind.
Let me digest that, okay? See, this is what happens when I would go to the medical examiner's office. Everything they would say, I'd have to go, stop. Okay, let me make a note of that in regular English. Let me see, Joe Scott, please. You're saying that the ligature marks, which are so bad, we may not be able to show the public. They go straight across, and they're really deep, and one part looks scabby.
Yeah.
Very, it almost looks like a scab, but it's not. It looks like deep bruising. Morgan just explained it. Now, you just said you've got the mark across the neck and the broken hyoid. You said is superior, but I think that means above that. Is that what that means?
Above,
Yeah, up here.
Okay, so that would indicate manual there at the hyoid. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Affirmatively.
All right. I got it. Okay, go ahead.
One more thing. When you look at that furrow, Nancy, the furrow runs parallel to his shoulders. It doesn't go up. If you're talking about a hanging, you have to get this. It's called, we use the term tenting feature, T-E-N-T-I-N-G, where this thing comes up to an apex like this in the back of the head. Anybody that's ever seen this?
I call it a smiley face mark.
Yeah, it kind of is.
Because it goes from ear down to ear like a big smile, which is ironic because it's, you know, that would be a suicide if you had the smiley right there. But when it's straight across, that indicates somebody from behind yanking back straight across. I mean, it's so clear. I mean, did they think we just fell off the turnip truck?
Apparently.
This is not going away. And I don't like it when it dies down in the headlines. No, it's not going away. And to try to feed us this line of BS that 11 new hours have just been released. Okay. To the point of tonight, Joe Scott, how does this figure, it's been referred to as a blob, but it's clearly a person, a male in a prison orange, going up the tier steps to Epstein's floor. Why are they there? They're not supposed to be there. This tells me there's more accessible, there are more entries and exits to this tier. How does that factor into your scenario? And this went down at 10:39 p.m. That's the time of the video.
Yeah. So I think that it would be really important to try to understand what the status of his body was when he was found. Body temperature, these sorts of things, to try to understand time since death. Here's one more piece to this, a bit of video that I would like to see. That's fascinating, seeing that figure going up the stairs. I want to see if there's any video showing somebody descending hours later, minutes later, whatever the case might be. And how do you explain that image? How do you explain that person that is retreating from this location? That's going to be the real tale of the tape there.
Joe Scott, listen to this.
The footage released from the MCC offers a limited view of the SHU common area and just a sliver of the staircase to Jeffrey Epstein's cell block. Off camera to the right of the staircase is another entrance into the SHU. According to correctional officers on duty, that entrance is locked and blocked by a second locked door. One of those doors is controlled remotely, while the other requires a key kept on the CO's persons. However, multiple people are seen entering and exiting while Tova Noel and Michael Thomas are nowhere near the door. Or not in the unit at all.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
We're going to get rid of the deep state. We're going to show you all of the files.
There's war over the Epstein files, and if there's nothing in them, why not release them? We've been told over and over and over that what's in those files is shocking. Bill Gates, Prince Andrew, weirdo, Clinton, Obama. I've got another wrench to throw in the works tonight. At the height of his wealth, Epstein was worth about $600 million. But now we have pieced together the facts that he was transferring billions, billions of dollars to multiple banks, including flagged Russian banks. So, they want me to believe a guy that was worth billions of dollars that was having business exchanges with the Russians and others committed suicide just as his case was going to trial. That did not happen. Listen.
It is absolutely ludicrous for Pam Bondi to say that there is nothing to investigate. 4,000 wire transfers, that is a heck of a lot of lines for possible investigation.
Senator Ron Wyden claims there's plenty to investigate, including thousands of lines of Epstein's wire transfers, that Epstein had to fund his sex trafficking ring somehow, and that the Treasury Department has discovered 4,725 wire transfers totaling over $1 billion flowing through just one of Epstein's banks. They also found that Epstein had frequent dealings with a sanctioned Russian bank. Wyden claims the DOJ has financial records for Epstein and calls for them to be released to the SFC for further investigation.
I sometimes don't even know what to say. So this is just from one bank. And joining me, Todd Shipley, cybercrime expert, former detective, Sergeant Reno, 25 years, author of Surviving a Cyber Attack, Securing Social Media, Protecting Your Home, Investigating Internet Crimes. It goes on and on. He's at darkintel.info. Todd, thank you for being with us. I hardly know where to start, but having worked at the Federal Trade Commission in the Antitrust Division, I'm used to a lot of documents when I have to. Nearly 5,000 wire transfers totaling over $1 billion, and that's just through one bank, including with sanctioned Russian banks. The DOJ is calling for an investigation. So Shipley, this is what I want to throw at you. Thinky. Use that noodle, Shipley. Epstein had Lolita Island. He had his Manhattan 7-floor stone brownstone. He had a mansion in Palm Beach. He had digs where he would hang out in London. His sex ring was worldwide. He had a little girl supplied to him from Jean-Luc Brunel in France. His reported net worth was $600 million. You want to tell me with the Russians, highly, highly paid corporate clients who wanted sex with little girls and he would fix them up, that nobody wanted him dead? Why do I need these 5,000 wire transfers tracked? Tell me, Shipley.
It's astounding to hear that and understand that there was that much money moving and nobody questioned any of this, especially when it was going to Russian oligarchs that may or may not be sanctioned. That's, you know, hugely problematic. And we know that, you know, what's been going on, they can't do that. So it's terrible to see that this is going on.
Okay, what I thought you were going to say, Shipley, is we need to trace those wire transfers because it could lead us to someone who has staggering wealth and the ability to make even behind bars. That's what I thought you were going to say.
Well, I can. And I'm surprised that they haven't been traced, all those wire transfers, to find out who's behind them. Not that they were just sent to him, but where they went out to identify all the people that are in the ring, which has never been identified. And that's been the whole problem with the Epstein case is we don't know who's involved and who he's had ties with, especially monetarily. So who sent him this money? And was it for the girls? We don't know.
I guess you've heard the phrase, follow the money. I mean, you know, let me go back to Dr. Bethany Marshall joining us, renowned psychoanalyst, author of Deal Breaker. You can see her on Peacock now and find her at drbethanymarshall.com. I want to see Bethany. Dr. Bethany, you know what I don't like? I don't like a two-tier justice system for rich people and regular people. I just read this article in the New York Times, and it had the interior of Epstein's 7-floor brownstone. There were all sorts of objects of art. He had a tiger stuffed and lounging on one of his Persian rugs.
He had a
first edition, wait for it, of Lolita. Oh!
Surprise, surprise.
Nabokov, about an old guy obsessed with and raping a 12-year-old little girl in a relationship with her, Lolita. He had people like Bannon, Israeli prime ministers, presidents, Woody Allen, birds of a feather, over for dinner. He would have scientists, authors. But what floored me, of course, you and I have similar backgrounds. You, child of missionaries all over the world and really bad conditions. Me growing up on a red dirt road that flooded all the time. When I looked at these pictures of all this expensive art, these girls never had a chance. The wealthy are covering for this guy in Bondi, the U.S. attorney, is letting it happen. I mean, we're mixing up photos here of the wealth at Palm Beach, Lolita Island, his seven-floor mansion in downtown Manhattan. It's just, it's nauseating. It's nauseating. And one victim described, I believe she was 13 or 14, being led in by Ghislaine Maxwell to give Epstein a massage, and he was butt naked. She's like 13. She's never seen a grown man naked. And he, the quote, massage starts. Then he has sex with the little girl. It's a rape, of course. Mm. And then they give her $200. They tip her like she's, you know, a waitress. And she goes on her way. Then I look at the opulence that he has. His billions and billions of dollars. And it makes me sick. I mean, Bethany, when I go to Kroger, I have to show two forms of identification to cash a check. And here he is transferring billions of dollars even to Russia banks that have been flagged. And nobody says a thing while he is raping little girls, Bethany?
Nancy, have you ever heard the term, behind every great fortune lies a great crime? You know, he has so many other, I'm going to say primarily men, although there are some women, who have also committed great crimes to make great fortunes. And all these men have something to protect when it comes to each other. When I first heard of Jeffrey Epstein, my first thought was, how does like a financial guy get hundreds of millions of dollars in wealth? That has never been clear to me. And one of the things that has not been talked about is money laundering. You know, every therapist in California was made to sign a form this year, verifying that we were not laundering money. It was such a strange thing. Lowly therapists who are out there serving the public, just trying to do our job, had to validate that we are not money launderers. And yet you have somebody like Jeffrey Epstein, who has billions of dollars going in and out of his account, and everybody turns a blind eye. That means that everybody's benefiting in some way, Nancy. Either they're benefiting because they have access to underage girls, they're benefiting because they can launder money too, or they're benefiting just because they get these dinners and private rides to the island. You know, it's like paying for friends, insinuating your friends into your secrets, knowing more about them. Pretty soon you have a band of thieves with everybody standing up for each other. A quick analogy, Nancy, is, you know, those spy movies where the spy is a double spy and decides to extricate himself. He's on the run, but everywhere he looks, there's an enemy because he knows too much. Everybody wants him dead. All those so-called people he was working for in the past now need him gone because he's holding all of their secrets. And I kind of think that that's what's happening right now, that our current administration is saying, look the other way, look the other way. Don't think about what's really happening. What's really happening is there are probably hundreds of people who needed Jeffrey Epstein gone for multiple reasons.
Lynn Shaw joining me. She has a very special voice today. Lynn Shaw, founder, director, Lynn's Warriors, committed to ending sex trafficking of women and girls. She's the host of Lynn's Warriors on YouTube. Lynn, when I think about, let's just go with Virginia Giuffre, but there's so many. There's literally thousands of girls over decades that he raped. I'm just telling you like it is. And Ghislaine Maxwell is a monster. She didn't just lead the girls in there and make it seem okay that they were about to get raped. She took part in the molestations, and now she's at Club Fed. I don't know what happened at Lolita Island down in the U.S. Virgin Islands. I don't know what happened. but I wasn't there, but based on what the victims say, it was awful. And now we've got him with billions of dollars, and we're counting on the wealthy and politically powerful to release those files. Bring it home, Lynn. What is this really about?
Nancy, I have given this so much thought. Knowing victims, working with victims of Ghislaine's and Jeffrey Epstein's. And you know what I'm going to say, and I'm going to let everybody else figure it out. Top down. Top down. We have so many unanswered questions. You talk about a two-tier justice system. What about the victims out there? On top of this Dirty Diddy case, we got this. Why did Pam Bondi even open her mouth and start with those binders that she said she went to FedEx and created them herself, and she made influencers hold them up and opened the can of worms, and now it's one lie after the other. But let's get back to that justice system. We've got all these victims. I always heard, being here in New York City, Jeffrey Epstein was a sex trafficking operation of children. Do I have proof? No, that is what I heard on the street. And you know what? When you blackmail people with children, that's where you make a lot of money worldwide. And you showed an image earlier, and I saw it. I was looking something up earlier. He had crates that were labeled child porn, kiddie porn, young and younger. Where are all those tapes? We never really heard much about them at all. We always heard that in France, that was a total child sex trafficking operation of 11 12 and 13 year old girls. So I ask you, all this information, now we've got the administration telling us, look the other way. We got orange blobs. We got a guy who looks like, you know, he supposedly killed himself with orange paper towels, please. And you know what? What about these victims? Let's keep going back to that. They're watching all of this. And again, on top of Diddy, this is why they never come forward. This is why we have such a hard time in the court system, because they're not believed. They're dismissed. And all the focus is put on these monsters like Ghislaine, who is a predator, a monster. And now she gets to run around with Elizabeth Holmes from Theranos and jog and lift weights. I don't understand any of this, but I do understand we have so many girls and victims looking at this, crying their eyes out, begging me, what is going on, Lynn?
Speaking of Pam Bondi, listen to what she once promised us. This is from our friends at Fox News.
What you're going to see hopefully tomorrow is a lot of flight logs, a lot of names, a lot of information. But it's pretty sick what that man did.
A source had told me where the documents were being kept. Southern District of New York, shock. So we got them all by, hopefully all of them, Friday at 8 a.m. Thousands of pages of documents. I have the FBI going through them. And Director Patel is going to get us a detailed report as to why the FBI withheld all of those documents.
Okay. Joining us right now is a very special guest. It is Jeffrey Epstein's brother, Mark Epstein. Mark, thank you for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You know, Mark, I know that people are using you like a crystal ball to try to see into the mind of your brother, Jeffrey Epstein. What I want to talk to you about is that orange-clad figure that is now appearing on video, and people are seeing it for the first time, which is concerning, and not in a good way, that we are just now seeing video which looks like someone walking up and down a stairwell, coming out of a stairwell and walking around on your brother's floor. Now, we've been told, maybe it's somebody carrying laundry. Well, can I tell you just off the bat, Mark Epstein, after having been in many, many correctional institutes and jails and juvie jails, you name it, I've been in it. No one walks around without their hands free, okay? It's not like I'm carrying the dirty clothes from the back of the house to the laundry room in the front of the house with my arms full. No. In a CI, Mark, if dirty clothes were being transported, they would be in a push hamper with wheels. No one walks around with their arms full of stuff. Let's just use the movies as an example, something that everyone would have seen. You don't see wardens walking the halls of a Mac CI or any CI with their hands full. Their hands are free, because you never know when you're going to be attacked or you have to break up a fight between inmates. You don't know what's going to happen. So that is not anybody carrying a load of laundry up and down steps, Mark.
Well, there's a lot of things on that video that don't make sense. In the early part of the video, they said that they saw Jeffrey, you know, being walked into his cell. First of all, you can't tell if that's Jeffrey or not. You can't tell who it is. And you don't just walk into Jeffrey's cell off of that common area. You have to go up that staircase through a barred locked door and then into the cell. He was the first cell on the right-hand side of the tier. So you don't just casually walk into his cell. And, you know, I've said before, every time the government tries to squash this thing, they just get deeper into a hole with, you know, misinformation. People have viewed the videotape and they've seen it's been edited and it's been doctored and it's split from a couple of different feeds. So, you know, how do you trust this? You can't. You know, and the thing with the video, too, early on, Bill Barr said that, you know, he saw the videotape and he saw that nobody went in or out of the tier. And that convinced them that it was a suicide. I've pointed out before how ridiculous that is because there were about a dozen other inmates on that tier that theoretically could have killed somebody without having to come and go from the tier. So to completely ignore that fact and to come to the conclusion that it was a suicide. And now when you add in the fact that the video does not show the door to the tier and people can get to the door to the tier going come without being caught on camera. So I don't know what footage Bill Barr was referring to. If this is the only video available, you know, and maybe he wants to reconsider his conclusion because to me, he looks foolish to come to that conclusion with the fact that you can't see the door to the tier. And there were other people possibly that could have done this. This was never looked at as a homicide investigation. By them calling it a suicide very early on, it eliminates any further investigating. Because if it's a suicide, there's not much to investigate. But it was never investigated as a homicide. And people are starting to ask for that. So I was working with a group of people that were trying to investigate this, and they were using the assistance of AI. And they put in like all the information that we have, or a lot of the information that we have, and the AI came up with a probability that this was 75% chance of a homicide and only 25% chance of a suicide. One of the reasons it couldn't be more specific is we don't have, you know, pictures of how his body was found. You know, they moved his body after he was found, which they shouldn't have done. So there's no, you know, sort of crime scene was messed up. So, and also the fact that the situation with the three broken bones in Jeffrey's neck, turns out that kind of triple breakage only occurs in less than 2% of hangings of this alleged type. So the AI put all the odds in together and came up with 75% chance of a homicide and 25% chance of a suicide.
Experts now questioning the government's account of what happened the night that Jeffrey Epstein was killed. And this as new CCTV footage has been uncovered with a mystery orange figure near his cell just hours before he dies. Now, why are 11 hours of video from outside his cell at Metropolitan Correctional Center just now being released? This so-called mystery blob in orange is not someone carrying laundry. That's not true, okay? I've been in enough CIs to know that's not true. When I would go in a CI, I would be totally hands-free.
And if I can add something.
Yes, please do.
Yeah, if I can add, I would like to see the continuation of that video and to try to see what the situation was when they took Jeffrey's body off of that tier. You know, who was there, what condition he was in, if you could see it. Well, there's also another camera that was working that they're not releasing video footage from yet, or if they ever will. So where's the footage from that second camera that was recording? I'd like to see that.
Well, here's another thing, Mark. We were led to believe at the beginning, these two doors we're showing right now were the only ways to get in and out. See this woman right there? She's got a push cart on wheels. She's got everything else wrapped around her like, you know, a mason would have an apron or a construction worker would have an apron around his or her waist where she puts all her stuff, hands free. I can't stress it enough for safety. So to suggest this is somebody carrying laundry is total BS. Now, what I was saying before, these two doors, we were led to believe were the entries and exits to Epstein's tier. No. newly released and only partially, see, he's hands-free too, partially released video shows us that there were other entrances and exits, at least one. That's a shock to the system, Mark.
Yes, it was. Like, but not surprising, because so much of the other stuff the government's putting out is, it turns out to be not so. Let's put it that way.
Why don't we just call it what it is? It's lies.
Yeah, it's lies.
They are lies. And when there's a lie, you know, even no matter how bad it is, say the two guards really did fall asleep, really were shopping online at the exact time your brother was killed, which is very far-fetched indeed. Even if one of the cameras wasn't working, you know, a lot of coincidences. Don't lie about it. So why are they lying about this? That tells me that something sinister or nefarious is happening if you have to lie about it, Mark.
Yeah, well, also what's happening is that more and more people who look at all the information that we have and not just listen to what the government says, nobody comes to the conclusion that this was a suicide. So now you have to look at it as a potential homicide. And one of the things that a homicide investigator would look at was who did it and why. So you have to look at now who might have possibly been able to pull off this kind of thing to coordinate this murder in a federal prison. And that's what people should start asking about is, you know, since it's not clearly not a suicide, who did this and why? And that's what a homicide investigator would look at. And that's what should be. I'd like to see them reopen.
Absolutely. And in this 11-hour clip, which is already facing claims of being doctored, you clearly see a shadowy orange figure moving up the stairs to Epstein's cell block. And this is timed at 10:40 p.m. the night before he was found dead shortly after. Again, federal investigators are lying, claiming that a CO corrections officer was carrying linen or inmate clothing. It is actually another inmate dressed in orange or someone else dressed as an inmate in orange. Okay, I'm going to circle back to this figure going up and down the stairs. And I can see it. And there are other clips where you see it even better. This is not someone carrying laundry. Do they think we're idiots? I mean, you can see it moving, like taking steps. It's an insult to anyone with even half a brain, for Pete's sake. With me, guys, a special guest tonight, it's Mark Epstein. This is Jeffrey Epstein's brother. Mark, as you know, I am not political. I do not mix politics with crime. I think it's very dangerous and hurts crime victims. But isn't it true that you spoke to your brother, Jeffrey Epstein, while Trump was in his office?
Yes, that's true. I would speak to Jeffrey and I'd ask him what he's doing, and he'll tell me he's with so-and-so or whatever. And there were times, or at least at one time I remember, he said he was with Trump. And there were people who worked for Jeffrey that was in his office that saw Trump in there frequently. So I don't know why he can possibly come out and say that he was never in Jeffrey's office. It's such a blatant lie that I don't know who would believe that after so many people can testify that that's not so.
What did you believe your brother did for a living? What did he tell you he did for a living?
Well, I know he managed large sums of money for wealthy people and he invested his own money. That's about as far as I know. I knew very few of his actual business dealings. I know one years ago, a group of people that he was with bought the company Rydell. It's a company that made football helmets for all the teams. So he owned that for a while. And I know because he told me, and he also sent me a Jets helmet from the company. And that's what he did.
I'll tell you why I'm asking you, Mark. From the records I've reviewed, he had about $600 million at the height of his wealth. $600 million at the height of his health. But then when you look at other wire transfers, they're up to the billions, that's B as in brother, billions of dollars transferred to accounts, including a flagged Russian bank. I know you don't know the intricate dealings of his business affairs. This is why I'm asking. when you got a guy that has access to billions, B as in brother, billions of dollars, unlike anything I could imagine growing up on a red dirt road, but billions of dollars with very influential people, possibly Russian bankers, and he ends up dead behind bars, and everybody still says it was a suicide, that's so far-fetched. You see where I'm going? You can't be unguarded in a CI and end up dead under these circumstances, having transferred billions of dollars and dealt with all sorts of powerful, influential, and wealthy people across the world. I mean, billions of dollars, Mark? Where did that come from? Do you have any idea?
Well, the only thing, the business he was in and what he did, he handled lots of money for very wealthy, for billionaires. So chances are he was investing their money or moving their money to where it needed to go.
For whatever okay, investment that they were is one explanation.
That's the only thing I could think of, why he would be transferring so much money.
Yeah, but from his personal accounts. So if they're from his personal accounts, that won't wash. But you know what? I haven't seen them all. So maybe some of that was his client's money. That is an innocent explanation. Do I believe it? No. But could some of it be attributed to his personal accounts? Maybe. Hey, did you ever meet Ghislaine Maxwell?
Yes. Yes. Back in the 90s, Jeffrey and Ghislaine met about 1991 or 92. They became close. And back then, we all used to hang out together a lot. Yes, I knew her kind of well back then.
What was she like, Mark?
Well, she just seemed, I mean, it's hard for me to say. I don't want to get involved with personal stuff. I'm interested in the circumstances of my brother's death. I don't want to get into the cases with my brother or Ghislaine or anybody else. I really want to focus on the circumstances of his death. I can't add much to what Ghislaine was like. There was nothing remarkable about it that I feel the need to comment on.
Okay, I accept that. Why do you believe, Mark, that the White House will not release the files?
Well, I think there's things in there they're hiding. That's why. I mean, their Justice Department is covering everything up. So I believe potentially maybe they're hiding information. They don't want things out. I can't think of any other reason.
Now, see, I agree with you, Mark. It's not just the homicide. It's the lying. It's the hiding. It's the subterfuge. It's the cover-up. We were told over and over that these files would be released, and now they're not. Hey, one more thing, Mark, before you leave us tonight. You were talking about your brother being brought back to his cell, I believe, from the showers. He was allowed to go to the showers to make a phone call, from what we've been told, which is completely not kosher. But listen to this.
While correctional officers admitted that Epstein was allowed to make an unmonitored phone call in the showers before he was returned to his cell at 7:40 p.m., CO Tova Noel claimed she left Epstein in the showers alone to use the restroom, and by the time she returned, someone else had already escorted Epstein back to his cell. However, it appears that Noel remains in the unit during the call and does personally walk Epstein back toward the staircase to cell Block L.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Another female staffer left the unit shortly before Noel gave the escort and returned shortly after Epstein was allegedly safely returned to his cell.
So this correctional officer, Tova Noel, says she leaves him in the showers to use the restroom in what we now know to make an unmonitored phone call, which is not prison procedure to make phone calls, to allow an inmate to make private phone calls from the bathroom. No. That said, Tova Noel claims she leaves him in the showers, and by the time she comes back, someone had escorted him to his cell. But apparently, on the video, it appears she remains in the unit during Epstein's call and does walk him back to his cell block. So why lie? It's a small detail, Mark, but it's an important detail.
Yeah, well, both Tova Noel and Michael Thomas, the two guards that got into trouble initially, refused to talk about any of this. We're trying to get to them to find out. Again, the main question, what position Jeffrey was really in when they found him, and they won't talk. Now, this was clearly a suicide. Why such secrecy? Why is everybody so mum? Why is everybody afraid to speak? They got a they were let off. The charges against them were dismissed. You know, a person is dead because of their lack of doing their job properly, and they just walk free. Whether Jeffrey committed suicide or he was killed, he was under the protection of the federal government in a federal prison. You know, neither case should have been allowed to happen. And because of the behavior of these two guards, Jeffrey ended up dead. And they're walking free. So the question to ask is, what kind of deal did they make? And why aren't they talking? What are they afraid of?
Regardless of what I think about Epstein, he's your brother, your blood. And I'm sorry for what you and your family have been through. Mark, thank you for being with us. More to come.
Comer responds to Ghislaine Maxwell's ransom letter, agrees to postpone the deposition, but publicly stated the committee will not, under any circumstances, consider granting Maxwell congressional immunity.
Why? Pardon for who?
For Ghislaine Maxwell.
Well, I'm allowed to give her a pardon, but nobody's approached me with it. Nobody's asked me about it.
DC insiders are concerned Maxwell's bid for a pardon is gaining traction after her meetings with Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche led to her being moved to a less restrictive low-security prison against BOP rules without a waiver because she is a convicted sex offender.
Straight out to veteran trial lawyer joining us, Eric Faddis. He is the founding partner of Varner Faddis Elite Legal, former felony prosecutor. Look, you don't need to drop a 500-pound piano on my head. I get it. She meets with the feds to talk about this case. And suddenly, she's moved to an honor dorm facility.
Right. I mean, you don't need to be a legal expert to kind of read the tea leaves on that. Clearly, there is some level of cooperation that's going on. And there are kind of two schools of thought. One is that the federal government is truly and purely investigating and wants to get to the bottom of this, wants to give the people transparency, wants to pursue accountability for those implicated. The other school of thought is that this is kind of a facade, kind of an effort to protect certain higher up individuals. Is there something more nefarious going on when we see Ghislaine Maxwell being transferred to this cushy prison facility that like Lynn Shaw said, has Elizabeth Holmes, the Theranos person, and, you know, they're hanging out playing tennis or whatever, raises a few eyebrows.
Ghislaine Maxwell has just been moved to a minimum security club fed lockup. Dr. Dwayne Hendricks joining us, well-known former associate warden, MDC, and more. Dr. Hendricks, describe the club fed where Ghislaine Maxwell is now housed.
Well, it's housed about 650 inmates. She came from a facility with a security fence around it in Tallahassee, which held 1,200 inmates. Basically, you know, other than having to stand up for count at 4 o'clock and 9 o'clock every evening and on the weekends and holidays at 10 a.m., she's pretty much got freedom. She's able to walk out of her dorm and catch sunlight and catch the sunrise and the sunset, go to the gym, go to religious programming and all those other things that other inmates at minimum security facilities can do. She can also be eligible to work in the community, because that's what, when people say you can go to a camp, basically inmates are in the community doing community projects. You know, one of the things that rose my eyebrows in this case is that typically inmates with more than 10 years cannot be housed at a camp. So this will be the first time that I'm ever hearing of, and I did designations many years ago in the Northern District of California. Typically inmates, especially those who are convicted of sex trafficking, would not be at a camp, especially above 10 years remaining on their sentence. So she's definitely, after the meeting she had with them, she did get some perks being allowed to move from Florida to Texas to Bryan.
Okay, here's what I've learned about her new digs. It's dormitory-style housing. There is no perimeter fence, we're told. She can play tennis, ping pong, volleyball, yoga, Pilates, a gym equipped with treadmills, ellipticals, stairmasters, and weights. They have the puppy program where she gets to pet and play with puppies. a commissary where she can buy all sorts of high-end beauty aids, creams, euthanizers, hair products, visitors allowed, weekends, holidays, so many freedoms, low security, freedom to move around the facility's grounds, outdoors with limited perimeter fencing, vegan diet. It just goes on and on. Lynn Shaw, founder Lynn's Warriors, isn't it true that convicted child molesters are not allowed in low security facilities, period?
Yeah, absolutely. We've never heard of anybody convicted sex trafficking being allowed in a facility like this. I've spoken to a lot of people to question them to make sure I know what I'm talking about. They've never heard of this. But I have to ask you something. Let me flip it for a minute. Perhaps she might be the next Jeffrey Epstein. Why is she allowed in a place with no perimeter? But I'll tell you who doesn't have yoga and vegan meals and high-end beauty products. All of the victims and survivors of Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, who are living for the rest of their lives with this trauma that they will never get over. It doesn't just end when you go through horrific circumstances like sex trafficking, grooming, all of this abuse. You know what? It lives with you forever. So while she's having a good time, I think we should all assume she gave some kind of information. She's being protected. Something more is going on here. I'm going to say it again like a broken record. Top down.
I'm looking at a photo right now of some of the women in this dorm facility, and they actually have hand weights. It looks like Mommy's Morning Out, and they're all in little matching shorts and t-shirt gym outfits, you know, like everybody matches their outfits in the Hamptons. Well, here they are, and they actually have hand weights, which is a huge no-no. Because one inmate can haul off and hit a warden or another inmate with those weights. They're out in a grassy area, like a park, and they're walking and laughing with their hand weights. Now we are learning, Tisa tells, that we're getting a new excuse for moving her to a new jail. They're saying that any assertion she's getting preferential treatment is absurd. Prisoners are routinely moved. That's BS. What do you know about her new digs, Tisa tells?
Her new digs, the streets are saying, is a reward. Now for what? Because they say it's for information she might have given. But like you pointed out, there is $1.1 billion with over 4,000 wire transfers going in and out of the account. You can talk to all the people that own the accounts that are going in and out. You can talk to the Pope, Mick Jagger. You can talk to President Clinton. You can talk to President Trump. There are a million ways we can get more information. Well, hell, we can even go back to that old case. The fact that now it looks like to me and everybody else, it is a thinly veiled excuse to give this woman presidential treatment. Everybody's horrified. But again, to go back to what Lynn said, just saying Maxwell might want to be the one that's being horrified. You get moved to a prison that has barely any security. You get moved to an honor unit where all the good kids that got a gold star on their report card in federal jail get moved to. You're now there sitting there like a sitting duck. Again, why was she moved? I would be very worried. If you look at what happened in Jeffrey Epstein, he was supposed to have a mandatory roommate. Roommate got, the day of his death, the roommate was inexplicably moved out of his cell. He was alone for over 11 hours. There were supposed to be 30-minute checks. This is in the highest profile case in a highly secured prison.
We wait as, God willing, justice unfolds. Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend. This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.